We're excited to have you here with us this morning. My name is Glenn, and I am the youth pastor here. Thanks, Jace. If you're new here with us, we just want to make you feel welcome. We're excited to have you here with us today. This is Lambert Park Church. Last weekend, I actually, there was a couple years where I barely went to any weddings, and then this year I have like three or four that I'm going to. And so last weekend I had the privilege of being in Luke and Lucy's wedding. Luke used to be on staff here, and Lucy is currently on staff, and so it was it was a really fun time we had together. One of the things that stuck out to me from the wedding, though, it kind of tied into what I'm talking today, so I'm like, oh, this is really interesting, is the food. Some of the food at the wedding was amazing. So they had a wedding here at 11, and then by 12 o'clock we were done, and then after that they had this little reception over here for people that weren't coming to the main reception, just like some sandwiches, some stuff like that, and I was just kind of over here, and so that was great. And then they went and did their pictures, and we went to the place where we were having the reception. But the bridal party wasn't there yet, and then hors d'oeuvres started coming out with all these like fancy little like nice hors d'oeuvres and stuff, and we positioned ourselves in a specific place. Some of you were there with me, so that when the hors d'oeuvres came out, they came to us first, you know. So we got like all the different hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that, and then the wedding party came. We sat and we prayed, and then there was like a three course meal that came out and stuff, and like all this amazing food. And then there's all, you know, if you've been to a wedding, there's all the other things that happen, you know, like all the toasts and all that stuff. And then they finish that with cutting the cake. And then after the cake, then they have like the cake is all put out, but then they had more food. They had all these other different things and stuff. I feel like I've had to fast all week just to make up for being at this wedding. It was amazing. As you think about your experience, think back, what is the best food you've ever had at a wedding? If you think back, like, whose wedding was that we had this like crazy spread? I don't know if you've ever think like, oh, whose food? And like, if you're about to get married, no pressure, honestly. Simple is fine. I've been to lots of weddings that are simple. But where is your favorite, like, where do you go when you're like, oh, I want to go for a really good meal? Where is your favorite place to eat? Or who in your life is like, they're the cook of the family? You know, maybe in your own family, or maybe it's like, we're going to grandma's house, and the kids are like, it's going to be so good. You know, I'm so excited because she puts crazy amount of butter and everything tastes amazing. Or whatever it happens to be, like there's always people in our family and our around us that are like these amazing cooks that know how to do that. Have you ever eaten with anybody famous? My brother used to work at a place called Planet Hollywood. I remember one time I came and there was like somebody famous there. And he's like, that person over there is a movie star. I'm like, what? Like, I didn't recognize them at all, but I'm like, they were there. I ate with somebody famous. You know, we always have these moments like, oh, who we've eaten with, who we've connected with. I think in our culture, we show our wealth in different ways maybe than they did in the time of David. The wealth that we have, we maybe show in different ways, like maybe like a big house or a fancy car and stuff. But in their day, they showed wealth a little bit differently. Our culture of food and eating is a little bit different because in their culture, the food was everything, right? Having money meant that you would host huge parties. Have money meant that you had wealth and you would show it by serving people food. Today we find ourselves in the 23rd Psalm for our summer series. If you're visiting, we've been in this series all through the summer and we're kind of close to the end. Next week Scott will be sharing and then Clayton, and that kind of wraps up the 23rd Psalm for us. What I'd like to do now though is read the 23rd Psalm. If you've been here every week, maybe by now you've almost got it memorized. But I wanted to stand. So if you just stand with me, and we're just going to read it together as a group. Just a way to kind of like, just kind of engage with it. Somehow when you're standing, it seems to be like easier to read. Anyways, so let's read this together. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Thanks. You may be seated. Well, you may have figured out, just as you're reading through that, you're like, oh, I know what we're talking about today. Food, right? Right in there, it says on Psalm 23, verse 5, right in the first part, says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Today, I want to do three things. I want to help you understand the context. I want to help you understand that David might have been thinking when he wrote the psalm, specifically this section there. Then I want to tie it in a little bit to God and Jesus, kind of pull in some other scriptures to help you understand that. And lastly, I hope to kind of apply it as we go. And then at the end, I have a little challenge for you. And so that's what I wanted to do with you today. I hope that as you unpack this and as I explain this to you, you'll understand this passage is about a meal with God. That this is this one section that I have today is about a meal with God. As David wrote this psalm, it's actually split up into two different stanzas. So we have verse 1 to 4, and then what I start with, 5 to the end, 5, 6, and 7, or 5 and 6. Five and six. There's kind of a change that also occurs in the language between what we've been doing up until now and what we are now. So there is, at the beginning, there's the shepherd and the sheep, and now there's like a table and a host. But what do these two kind of have to do with each other? Maybe you've never really contemplated that. Like, how do the, you know, shepherd and sheep and table and host connect? And as I was studying, it became more and more apparent to me. I'm like, oh, these actually connect like crazy. When you think about David's life as a shepherd, they connect really well. And so I want to help unpack that maybe in a way that you've never heard before, or maybe you've heard this before, but for me, it was brand new. So again, there's these two different metaphors. There's the shepherd and the sheep, and then there's the generous host and his guests. The first part of Psalm 23 is this food and drink for animals, and then the second part is all about food and drink for us, for human beings, for people. Jesus actually does a similar thing in Luke chapter 15, where Jesus talks about the lost sheep at the beginning of Luke 15, and then he talks about his two lost sons, you know, the prodigal and like his kind of bitter older brother, and the feast that happens at the end. So again, it's a similar kind of story there for them. So Psalm 23:5, you prepare a table. At first glance, when I read this, I think prepare a table. I think about my kids. I'm like, hey, kids, go set the table. And that's what they do. They run off. They get the plates out and the cutlery and all those things. I'm like, okay, we're preparing a table, getting it ready for the food. But what I found in my research as I kind of started to understand the era that David was in, it wasn't probably the same kind of prepare that I think of when I think of preparing a table. Actually be more similar to what, I don't know, have anybody been to an Ethiopian restaurant? Anybody? In their culture, my understanding is it'd be similar if you've ever been to an Ethiopian restaurant. It's kind of all comes out in one big dish. So I have a picture here, I think, of a big dish. Yeah, so what you do is you order a bunch of different food. I was, when my brother lived in Edmonton, like a while ago, we went to this Ethiopian restaurant, and this is how the food came. We all said, oh, I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and then it all comes out on one big, huge plate. And what happens is then everybody, they take, you get like a kind of a flatbread or something, and you take and you each get a piece of flatbread. So every time you dip in, you don't touch the food, but your bread does, and then you take that and then you eat that, or whatever, without utensils. Right, and so, you know, if I want a little bit of the red stuff with a little bit of the yellow stuff, you know, I kind of mix the two together, but I don't touch it, just the bread does, and every time I'm done that, I get a new piece of bread. So every time there's food is provided, there was like, it was put out, and then there was bread, and they would eat the food with bread, which made me realize, I'm like, they didn't need utensils, they didn't need cutlery, they didn't need any of that stuff. So you prepare a table before me is actually more, you prepare a meal before me. It's more of God saying, I'm preparing this meal before you in the presence of your enemies. It's like, I'm going to get this thing. In fact, interesting thing in their culture, most meals were in their culture prepared by ladies. And so for God to say, I, God, am going to humble myself to say, I'm going to prepare this for you. I'm going to come before you and say, I want to do this. I want to say, this is me coming and making a meal to prepare for you. Interesting switch in paradigms in my mind when I started to understand this. So the phrase to prepare a table meant to prepare a meal. Again, a meal with God. In a book that was passed on to me, it's called The Good Shepherd by Kenneth E. Bailey. Helps me understand the tradition of hospitality in the Middle East at that time. When you want the community to know that you've acquired wealth, You do not buy an expensive car or a large house with acres of grass around it, as we do in our culture. Rather, you host meals with three times as much food as you have numerous guests. So people come, and there's so much food, you can't even eat it all. And so that was their culture to say, hey, if you've got money, this is what you do. In the day of David, though, with a shepherd, maybe he wouldn't have had quite so much. Right? If you think about David and his life as a shepherd boy, he probably wouldn't have had much, maybe not even a nice tent as this. Just something very simple. To prepare a table would have been for him to prepare something simple, to say, oh, I'm going to provide this food. When God prepares, he prepares this amazing feast. But when David thinks about preparing, maybe he thought of something simple, the best that a shepherd could do. So we now understand this meal that's being described. But what of the enemies? So you have a simple meal or maybe a lavish meal that Jesus or that God is talking about. And then this enemy side of it, and they actually tie together. It fits into the sheep metaphor, actually really cool. So why would God prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies? So an enemy, by definition, is somebody that's an adversary or a foe, somebody that's maybe hostile to you, an opponent, a rival. Maybe like in sports, you know, you've got like you're on a basketball team and there's like the rivals, there's opponent, or in war, there's the adversary, the people you're going to attack. In the Bible, there's actually two different words for enemy. Actually, there's about four, but two words that are kind of most commonly used. One is oyeb and one is sarar. Oyeb is like used like, I think it was like 500 or 600 times in the Old Testament alone. And then sarar is just used about 30 times. This passage is specifically talking about sarar. But oyeb is that idea of like battle, war, like adversaries against lots of people and everybody's attacking each other. This word sarar is actually only used a few times. And it's more of like somebody that's like against you, like individually more. It's more of like a one-on-one kind of battle with somebody. And so when it says, prepare a table in the presence of my enemies, it's more like kind of more of an individual kind of adversary. We know in the culture of David that Joshua, following the law, he had set up some areas in there that to protect people. So they had... in Exodus 21, the law, they said, hey, you need to provide spaces for people that are maybe wrongly accused, or maybe they did kill somebody by accident. So they had these places called cities of refuge. And they set those up so that you could go there and flee there. And they're kind of spread out all over the countryside and different, one in each kind of nation, one in each of the 12 tribes, so that there's a place to kind of like hide. If you did something wrong, you can run there. It appears that this idea of like a refuge, a place of hiding, goes back actually to the time of Egypt. So they said, God said to them, like, hey, you know, you were in a place in Egypt where you had no refuge. You had no place to hide. If there was an enemy, you were stuck. You couldn't get away from them. They would just come and attack you. But God said, I want something different. I want to provide a different way. In fact, he goes so far as to say in Deuteronomy 10, verse 19, love those who are aliens, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt. It also instructs Israelites to leave the edges of fields for aliens and strangers. So God's creating this structure to say, hey, if people are not part of your culture, that are maybe running, that are enemies from other places, you can find comfort, you can find a place, you can find refuge in Israel. But there's another thing that also happened. Maybe people couldn't quite get to there, or maybe it just became part of their culture, but the desert actually became not a very safe place. In their culture, the desert became a place that people would also run to hide. A murderer would be hunted down until he was found out. Murderers and thieves ran to the desert. The desert became the home of the fugitive. But it was a horrible home, a home of fear, danger, and oftentimes certain death. I was chatting with Kenzie, who's our children's pastor, and she was recently in Israel, and she was on one of the tours and, you know, looking out into the desert, and that's where all the sheep were. And it's like, oh, like in my mind, I always think of like, you know, sheep in like green fields, you know, finding food in the field and eating, you know, kind of like the deer do in Victoria, you know, like kind of like they just have as much as they want. And there's food all over the place, right? But actually, lots of times the sheep in their culture would actually feed in the deserts. This is what the tour guide said. The tour guide said, they're eating food we cannot see. They find little bits of food in the desert that, you know, you walking up, you wouldn't be like, oh, look, yum, there's some food there, you know, but the sheep do. So here we have in the desert, we have shepherds and sheep, but we also have these people that are fleeing from enemies. Starting to see the connection? So we have the enemies and the sheep, and there's this battle that's maybe going on, and the shepherds maybe were in danger, right? So here they are with their sheep in the desert, living life, and all the fugitives are also going to the desert. However, there was this huge exception to the unfriendliness of the desert for a man cursed by past sin, maybe being hunted down by the law of vengeance. It was a custom of hospitality. Scott shared a book with me, and in it, it talks about this idea of this golden piety of the wilderness. And it was this idea that shepherds were to kind of hold this idea of like this piety that they were supposed to have. Every wanderer in the desert, whatever his character pass, was to receive into a shepherd's tent as a guest of God. They were to be furnished with food and keep invalid or protected. The shepherd host took responsibility for this person's safety. And in fact, this custom still prevails today in Bedouin cultures. So here we have this meal with God. I find it really interesting. As I think about this, I'm like, okay, so we have David, who is a shepherd, writing a psalm about shepherds and meals. And in my mind, it makes more sense now as I think, I'm like, oh, maybe that was his story. Maybe when he was running from King Saul and he had to go into the wilderness, into the desert, maybe a shepherd took him in and said, I'm going to take care of you for a couple of days. And then he went and found another shepherd and was taken care of. Or maybe he himself as a shepherd had somebody come into his tent and he was in the presence of enemies thinking, well, what's this guy going to do? What's going to happen? I know that this person might be dangerous. And yet, this law came into play where he was to offer, as a shepherd, bring somebody in and take care of them, provide for them for 2 days, take them into his tent and give them food. As I was thinking about this, I was trying to relate it to my life. I'm thinking, okay, that's there, we're here, how does this relate? And a story that I haven't thought about for years and years came to mind. I grew up in Salmon Arm, but before that, when I was in elementary school, we lived in Olds, Alberta. And any Albertans there? A couple people? A few of you? Yes, okay, you understand, you will. So in Alberta, they have these crazy snowstorms. And about every 2 or 3 years, they would have this snowstorm. They would, like, wipe out everything. I remember my parents, like, they would plow the roads, and it would be so high that we'd have to, like, dig our cars out. The weather was so terrible. And I remember this one time, we would actually build stone, like huge, like tunnels in the snow. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. So it was really fun for me as a kid because if you go inside, it's actually warm, and if you build like kind of an igloo, anyways. But this one time, I remember my parents, they ran a Dairy Queen, and out in front of their Dairy Queen, all the roads had been closed, and there was a man inside a car. And I don't know the whole story because I was a kid, but I remember my parents had talked to him in some way and found out that he was on his way west, like we lived in Olds, and I think he was heading to Sundry or Didsbury or something. And there was this snowstorm and the roads were all closed. And my parents had decided to invite him to our house to stay the night because he didn't have any place to stay. And he was just had his car running. All the gas stations were closed. And my parents had made that call to say, like, we should invite him to our house because who knows, right? Car could have run out of gas in the middle of the night. He's asleep. You know, anything could have happened. My parents made that call to say, nope, we're going to invite this guy to our house. And so my parents invited him, and they told us, hey, just so you know, if you see a man, we've invited this guy because of the snowstorm and stuff. And I remember going to sleep that night being really afraid. Like, it's stuck in my head thinking, like, there's somebody in our house right now. Like, what's going to happen? You know, if I remember right, I think he got up even before we were awake, and the roads must have been cleared, and he got up, and he left early when the sun came up and got out of the house. But I remember thinking of here's somebody in the presence of maybe an enemy, maybe somebody who might be a foe, you know, and I was challenged and I thought to myself, I'm like, that's what these shepherds did every time. That's what my parents did, and they modeled that to me of like, oh, hey, how, Glenn, can you take care of those who are in need? How can you have eyes to see the people in the moment that need something, need a hand, need a apple, and need some support or need something? And we and our family have decided we want to kind of have take care of those who maybe are in need. We've started to like put granola bars in our van, and we run out all the time, but we put it in our van, and then if somebody comes to our window asking for something, we say like, here's a granola bar. Because we want to teach our kids, as I was taught by my parents, to say, hey, take care of those people that come to you who are in need. Like I said, David, I think, at times maybe had to run. He had to run from King Saul, and yet there was the shepherd's code that happened in the wilderness. And maybe, I don't know, I'm not David, maybe that's what David was thinking when he wrote this. He said, oh, I understand what it means to be running, and I know that God provided for me because of this code. We often think of God as our father at the beginning of our lives, the miracle of birth. We think of God as judge at the end. But God is our shepherd, kind of in the middle of it, through the years of difficulty, maybe sustaining us, maybe when we were far from God or running away from God. Maybe that's you here today. You're running away from God or have been running away from God. I know that at times, the way that I lived my life, I was an enemy of God. Even though maybe at times my appearance looked like I came to church with my family and with my parents, and I sat there and everybody would not know, but in my heart, I was an enemy of God. I didn't want anything to do with him. I think this is where we commonly fall short, where we think about who God is in our everyday lives. Where is God in our midst? God is here, I believe. I believe that God is here with you. He is here to guide you through your difficulties. He's here to provide a meal, a table for you, and support you. Even today, if you think, I'm an enemy of God, I don't want anything to do with him, God prepares a table for you. I think God is the shepherd who preserves us, accompanies us, and rules us. And I think that this is what David might have been thinking when he wrote, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So as I said at the beginning, I want to kind of break this into three little parts and trying to kind of explain it as we go. And so that's what I think when I think about David. Maybe that's what he was thinking as he put this together. Now that we kind of get the context and understand maybe that, how do we put that together to today? How do we apply it to our lives today? How does Scripture past David unpack this and help us understand? I hope I am a person, I hope that Lambert Park Church is a community of people where others can come in and feel safe, feel like they have a refuge here, where we provide a place that people can come and feel supported. As a community, that we are people that look out for others. And hopefully a place where we have an open table. And I know I want to say right at the outset, I'm going to kind of encourage you along those lines that we all go through seasons. I know this last season for our family, we've haven't been able to have as many people at our table as we would have liked. And I know there's seasons for everybody where you're like, yeah, we had tons of people and I made lots of connections. I used to go for coffee once a week with this guy and that guy. And there's seasons in life. And so I want to say that at the outset as I kind of unpack some scripture for you. But it also says in Hebrews 13, verse 2, it says, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 16 says, don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? By entertaining people, I think that we are showing God to other people. That if God does, through the Holy Spirit, live in us, then when we're hospitable to others, we are being God to people. We are showing God's love through us. To entertain others is to entertain God. And even as an angel, we are hosting a meal with God. God through us. I hope that as you think about that, though, you think of how can I be a refuge? How can me and my life be a refuge for those who are struggling? How can I support those? Maybe there's a blizzard and you make donuts for people, or maybe there's things that are going on and you're like, oh, I'm going to pull these people in. How is it that you can say, I want to be a refuge for others, a shepherd's tent with a good meal, good conversation, and maybe even protection? There are, of course, in the time of David, good shepherds and bad shepherds. The final test of a shepherd was how far would he be willing to go in risking his life to protect his sheep or fugitives? Would he lay his life down for them? Jesus is our good shepherd, guiding us, saving us, protecting us. He laid his life down for all of us, that we might have freedom, that we might have freedom from sin. Jesus came and he said, I'm going to lay my life down for each of you. He became our shepherd. He became the sheep for us, and he became the sacrifice. My question for myself, my question for each of you is, how far will you go for a stranger? Maybe you're here today and you're a high school student, and you think about your school, and every year there's new kids that come, right? And maybe you're here and you're going to be a new kid in a school. Maybe you're going from grade 8 into grade 9. And how is it that you are going to look out for those people that are brand new? Are you going to be able to be a friend to a stranger, somebody who's coming in? Maybe you're new here to Victoria and you're looking for a place to connect. Can you be a friend to somebody? Because oftentimes when you come into a new place, you think everybody knows everybody. But the reality is, that even here today, I see people that are new, that have never been here before. Can you reach out to somebody beside you and invite them and connect with them? And can you be a friend to somebody who's brand new? I referenced earlier this idea of the prodigal son and his older brother. As I understand the story in Luke 15 about the prodigal son and the older brother, the father in the story is God, who is super happy to see his son, who took half of his money and squandered it and used it on wild living. But in that story, I don't think as much about who was at the party and what they were thinking about the prodigal son. Maybe the prodigal son was sitting there thinking, here's my enemies. These people don't want anything to do with me. I've made a mistake, and they don't want anything to do with me. In fact, the older brother probably looked at his little brother as an enemy, right? And yet, God in that story said, I'm going to prepare a feast for you. I want to welcome you in. You are welcome here at my table. I'm going to invite all my friends to be here with you. Matthew 5, verse 16 says, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. I think about that story and think about the Father and how God comes and he provides a table, he provides a meal for many people, and invites everybody to come, including his son, who had no right, kind of, in a sense, to be there. And yet God said, I want to invite you. Even those who hate you will see your good deeds before men and glorify your Father in heaven. Some people look at this passage and they think of that. They think, oh, other people looking in on me. Where they say, oh, other people are seeing how God is looking in on me and blessing me, and they're my enemies. They're kind of looking out. We offer hospitality. 1 Peter 4:9 says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Right? We're to kind of have a grateful heart. So if you're here today and being like, I guess I'll invite somebody over, then don't do it. That's not what God wants. He's like, I want you to be joyfully saying, I'm going to invite somebody. I'm going to create hospitality for somebody else. Luke 14, verse 12 to 14 says this. When you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't just invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they'll just pay you back. They'll invite you over. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So my question for you was, when was the last time you offered hospitality to someone who was in need? Possibly you could give it a try by doing that sometime this week. Maybe you've never served. We have something called an agape meal, where we go and we serve those who are in need in our community down at the Mustard Seed. We just host a meal there, and that's something you've never done. And you're like, okay, the next one, I'm going to do it. Whatever it is, I encourage you to find places where you can take care of those, you can serve, you can look for people who are in need. Matthew 5, verse 42 to 46 says this, Give to anyone who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and send rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you don't know, the tax collectors were kind of like the shepherds. They were the lowly people. They were the people that are down in the bottom. And they would do stuff to kind of say, hey, you do this for me, and then, or I'll do this for you, then you do it for me. The idea of this presence of my enemies means that God demonstrates his costly love to me regardless of who is watching. People hostile to me will observe what God is doing, and God knows their hostility against me will be extended to God as a result. God doesn't care. God offers that love anyways. Understanding this, for me, understands how scandalous it was, the way that Jesus lived his life, how he sat with people who were far from him, how he entertained people that fit the mold, right? Fit the mold that the Pharisees and the Sadducees of the day, the religious leaders, the pastors of the day had, right? They didn't fit the mold, and so he said, I'm going to go to those who don't fit the mold, and I'm going to invite them. I'm going to have fellowship with them. I'm going to connect with them and care for them. How Jesus showed his love and acceptance to all. It could have been that a shepherd was by himself, alone, and a stranger came to his tent. The two would have eaten a very simple meal together. The shepherd would have taken that as a meal with God. A simple meal. I encourage you to think, some of you might be like, I'm not really into inviting like 50 people over to my house and having a huge meal. But a simple meal with you and one other person, maybe that's something you could do. Maybe this week you could say, okay, there's this person that I've been meaning to get together with. Can you say now, I'm going to commit to doing that. I'm going to not put it off any longer. I'm going to sit down and have a meal with this person. I'm going to connect with this person who maybe is far from Jesus, who needs somebody to connect with them. That's my challenge for you today as we close. Just think, I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. Just think of it, of who it is that you can connect with. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a sibling, maybe it's somebody that's a neighbor who you've been putting off having over for dinner or for a meal or even for a coffee or tea. I just encourage you to think about, who is it that I can invite? Who can I be God to this week? Who can I connect with and be God's hands and feet to them today and this week? So, yeah, just encourage you to think about that as we sing a couple songs here.